Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today's guest is Robin J. Emden, known as the Procrastination Slayer and Momentum Architect. Robin is the creator of Get Resultsology, a system designed to help solopreneurs and business owners move past procrastination, build momentum, and finally follow through on what matters most. He knows the challenges of trying to do everything yourself, and he's built a framework that turns scattered effort into consistent progress. And today, I'm looking to explore a little bit about Robin's journey and how business owners like myself can apply his system, and why relationships and accountability play such a powerful role in keeping us on track. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. I enjoyed my experience on your podcast and thought it would be fun to have you share with my listeners your system. And because I'm one of these people, I swear the older I've gotten, the more I was never diagnosed as ADHD ever in my life. I was very always systematic and left brain about things that I did. But the older I've gotten and the more I've gotten into being my own boss, and also with the with information being so, you know, we're inundated with it, and I'm such a curious person that I want to know more about things that come across my path, that I've become like that, you know, the squirrel, right, going down the rabbit holes, and therefore I lose some of the organization that I thought I had. I used to be a professional organizer, believe it or not, in one part of my life, and now it's out the window. So I am very curious about, you know, your business and how it can help me. I'm being selfish about that. So let's start with you being the procrastination slayer. What is that? How does that resonate with your clients? And you know, where can we go with that?
Well, okay. So a couple of things. It's not just you. I grew up in a village here in England where my neighbor, who was a lot older than me, she was old enough to be my mother, maybe even my grandmother, had never traveled in her entire life more than 6 miles from where she was now living.
Oh, wow.
And that was just, and when, you know, we talked about it, she said, well, nobody did, you know, unless right. You were the elite and very wealthy and that was your job, but nobody moved around. And now we live in an age where, with thanks to that dopamine junky thing that we call a mobile phone in our pocket, we travel virtually around the world hundreds of times an hour, just scrolling through. Oh, I want to look at this. I want to look at that. And that's just one. I mean, that is probably the worst invention for distractions in the world, as in it's brilliant at doing that. So it isn't just you. It's the age we live in. Everything's changing. And I'm sure everybody listening will understand that. That we're just being bombarded from all conceivable directions. But in order to answer your question, I need to explain that I wasn't a procrastination slayer. I was a procrastinator. I still self-identify as a chronic procrastinator.
Oh, now, really?
To make that distinction, 95% of people, when asked, will own up to procrastinating sometimes. We all procrastinate a little bit. You know, oh, we're going to do the dishes after dinner. Now I'll do them in the morning. Who cares? You know, we all do that from time to time. Well, maybe not fastidiously tidy people, but the rest of us do. But of the 95%, 1 in 5 of those, 20%, will own up to being chronic procrastinators. And a chronic procrastinator is somebody like me who realizes that it's life-changing, life-impacting, it's damaging procrastination. The word is chronic. It's constantly there. And so what happened was, for me, was my background is I trained way back in 2001 on an invitation only event with Tony Robbins in California, where I was training to work for him as a life coach. And as things turned out, his plans changed, my plans changed. I'm from England, and he wasn't interested in remote workers at that time. We had Skype, but that wasn't his model. And anyway, his plans moved on from there. And I didn't want to move to California. I had a family back here in England, and so
Right.
I was concentrating on those, and I set up my own life coaching business here. And then, as luck would have it, 3 or 4 years later, I became a full-time single dad. And I put the coaching down, and then cut forward to 2019, and I'm in a coffee shop talking to my older brother. I'm bragging, I've just got my degree. Look at me, aren't I brilliant? I studied at home and I finally got my degree. And my brother was falling asleep with boredom. He didn't care. That's what families are for, you know. So I thought, I've got to wake him up, and otherwise, and he was starting to look at his watch about thinking about going. And I said, mind you, I said, trust me to take 10 years to do something I should have done in six. And he went, and his eyes lit up, and he went, yeah, what was that about, you know? And I went, oh, you know, procrastination. And I laughed and I changed the subject. And then when I was driving home, I had a not a literal facepalm moment, because I would have crashed the car, but I had a facepalm moment, hands on face, mentally, when I was like, hang on a minute, Robin, you're a trained life coach. How dare you procrastinate? How dare you take 10 years to do something you should have done in six? And I thought, I've got to square this circle. That's not right. Why am I procrastinating? And the other question I had was, why have I only just noticed? And I
Right.
realized I always used to think about procrastination up until that point, which I realized had impacted my whole life, every area of my life. I always thought of it like we used to think about the common cold. I say used to, because these days we tend to think about, you know, it could be a sniffle, could be something more serious. But then in 2019 and before, everyone, oh, I'll just work through this cold. Oh, procrastinating. Oh, I'll just do it tomorrow. Hello, that's the mantra of the chronic procrastinator, isn't it? I'll
Right.
do it tomorrow. So I had this facepalm moment. I was embarrassed. I was, when I started to think about the cost of it in terms of the impact on my relationships, my career, my finances, my health. Every aspect of my life was impacted by it. So by the time I got home, I was both really angry with myself and really, really emotionally distraught and upset. And I rang my brother and I said, oh, just remind me, you know, you used to be a mental health professional, and I've done all these dozens of days with Robbins. What was the cure again for procrastination? I had a little mental note paper and pen there, and there was a long pause and then a sharp intake of breath. He went, I don't know. I'm like, oh, what? Well, if you don't know, and I'm struggling, I'm really struggling to think about what it is. Well, crikey. And then we had the gift that keeps on giving, which was COVID, as I mentioned. And I only mean it in the sense of the gift was an unbelievable amount of time in lockdown.
Right.
So I decided to look at the research. I originally thought, I'm going to research it. And of course, I discovered quite quickly that, for example, in one 10-year period in the early 2000s, they had done over 900 research papers into procrastination and productivity. So I thought, oh, okay, I don't need to research it, but I do need to bring the common strands together. And hello, I've got a degree. I know how to do that. So I
Right.
started writing it down and I started putting it into a book. And I thought, well, I need to. What became just, I was writing it down for me. I thought actually I could serve a bigger community, because I bet you, I wonder if I'm the only person in the world working for myself, nice coffee machine, nice view from the window, flexible hours, sat in front of the TV, not working, reading a book, going for walks rather than working, doing anything but working, playing and
Yeah.
scrolling, doom scrolling on the phone. You know, oh, a
Right.
cat video. Oh, another cat video. Oh, another cat. Oh, that's a cool. Oh, there's a dog video. That was one quite funny. That's a dog and cat video. I can't be the only one, and I know I'm not the only one. And so I thought, okay, I really need to find the solution to this. And so the result was the book, which only came out last April this year.
Right. Congratulations. Questions come up just from listening to your story again, because I did hear it and looked into it before, but you took 10 years to get a 6-year degree. I'm not going to get into details, but
No.
first of all, what was the degree in?
Okay, that was with the British Open University, which is a government-run university. And I started off doing psychology, obviously, with my leaning, but I didn't like psychology. I thought it sucked. That was, sorry for psychologists out there. It wasn't for me. There was too much maths. That was my problem
Okay.
with it. And then I then added philosophy to it, and then I added the thing I'm really passionate about, which is completely unrelated, Roman history.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Okay. So, because what I wanted to ask about, well, obviously you learned how to research and so on,
Yes.
getting your degree, and that's what
And how to
prompted
read
you.
research is the critical thing.
The
How to
what?
evaluate the research for
You're right.
yourself.
Okay. But what comes to mind for me is like when, I don't know, like, is what took you longer. Yes, you procrastinated, but because you didn't like what you were doing. And the same with people who are solopreneurs and business owners. Do we procrastinate because we're procrastinating on the parts of the thing that we don't like, or just that we've taken on too much? Because
Oh, all of the above.
all of it, okay.
All of it. There's so many reasons I procrastinate. But here's the kicker. What I found when I did the research was I found myself quickly getting drawn into the sciences. And I'm not a scientist. My last exam at school, I got 9% in biology, and that's because I spelt my name right. No joke. The teacher felt sorry for me. But
Okay.
I found myself looking at neurology, psychology, neurosciences. Because procrastination is an inside job. We are hardwired to procrastinate. It's a
Really?
behavior. Yes. So it
Yes.
comes
Okay.
obviously. I mean, it sounds obvious when you say it, but it may not be so obvious. It wasn't to me, but we're hardwired. It's our natural behavior. It comes from its
But
nature.
we can change that,
We can
or we
manage
learn
it.
we can
We
manage
can
it.
manage it. And that's
Okay.
the critical thing. And some people are better at managing it than others. Some people, I've got a friend in California, and I was telling her what I was doing. Oh, I'm writing a book on procrastination and how to be more productive. Oh, do people struggle with that? Really? And I was like, she wasn't being sarcastic. She was being serious. She's a very successful businesswoman, and she's never had a procrastination day in her life. And I was like, and for me, I was like, oh, success leaves clues. Let me pick your brain. There are people like that, and they're not going to be interested in my book, and they're probably not going to be listening with respect. They won't be listening
Right.
to this because it's not a problem for me.
Right.
But 95% of people said that it is a problem for them. Of those, 1 in 5 said it's a major problem for them. That's a lot of people.
Yes, it is. Okay. So, for business owners and solopreneurs who would be interested in listening to this podcast, what's the first step they can take to implement your system into their daily work,
Okay,
habit, whatever?
I didn't properly fully answer your question, so I'll answer both questions but this way. The first thing is the way the book is laid out is it's three sections. The first, you need to do three things. You need to understand that you're procrastinating. And the easy way to remember what I mean by that, so I'm teaching people to fish rather than giving them the fish. Several people say, oh, just tell me how to cure it.
Right,
I can't just tell you. You have to understand it.
okay.
Because, and here's why, if you get to the end of the year and you don't have enough money, you can always make more money. Money is infinite. Governments print it. Now, we can't print it, we'd go to jail, but we can make more if we can figure it out. But if you get to the end of the year and you've procrastinated that time away, it's gone forever. You can't get it back. So the time to catch procrastination is not after when you realize it's too late, but before it's too late. So I was literally sat on the sofa this morning reading a book before I went to work, and I read for too long, and I thought, Robin, you're procrastinating right now. Oh, okay, right. I know I'm doing that. I caught it and I dealt with it. I went to
Because
work.
you identified, you knew what it was,
Yes,
it's
I'm
now
being
in your
over.
brain.
I'm oversimplifying it a little bit,
Yeah.
but yes, you need to catch it. It's too late if you're just full of regret about, like in my case, decades of procrastination, literally decades. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is you need strategy. After you understand it, you need strategies to deal with it. And there are multiple strategies in my book because no two people are the same, and no single strategy works the same way for different people. So I have what I call a little pick a mix or a toolbox of different strategies, and I invite you to try them all and find out which works for you. Some will work
Okay.
better than others. And that's all about motivation, getting motivated, because going right back full circle to an earlier question of yours, the reason you are procrastinating is because you're not passionate about something that you're doing. You might think you are, but the thing that you're doing right now or supposed to be doing right now, you may be overwhelmed by it. You may be just not, it's just not your thing, right? So all of these things kick in, and you just, well, I'd rather do something that I'm familiar and comfortable with. And I go into the book, I go quite deep into the psychology of what's really going on, so that you can fully understand why you're not passionate about it and what you need to do to turn that around. And that, and then there's that, that M word, motivation, is what you're after. How do you get motivated? And I tackle that in the book. So if I may, Janice, bearing in mind that we don't have a lot of time, I'll give you the crown jewels, because I don't want to talk around it. I want to give your listeners value, right? So I will, that when someone says to me, well, what's the solution? Oh, you know, I just said flippantly, well, I can't leave you that. I'm going to give you the solution because I think it will help now. Once you understand you're procrastinating, what you need is you need your inner productivity team. I call them the productivity trifecta. It's an inside job, because inside your brain, there are, now I don't understand science, so apologies to people that are, for me, oversimplifying, but I'm a communicator. I try to communicate, and I hope that by the time you've listened to this, you will understand at a level I understand. If you're a neuroscientist, you're going to be, your hands will be on your face, what the hell's he doing? So in your brain, you have, right at the heart of your brain is the limbic system, which is where the procrastination comes from. It's the most basic part of the human brain. If you think about it, your brain has two jobs. Job number one, survive. Job number two, procreate. That's it. There is nothing else. Everything else is icing on the cake. Everything that, what you do with your brain, you have to survive, you have to procreate, that survival of the species. That's it. And the limbic system is in charge of that, and it's instinctive. It works very, very fast. It's where your fight, flight, and freeze response comes from. It's also what we call threat modality. When you feel threatened, it triggers the limbic system. Now, it used to be that a man-eating tiger walking towards you thinking, lunch, that would be enough of a threat to trigger your limbic system, and then you either fight or you freeze, right? So flight or fight or freeze. But we don't have man-eating tigers in great numbers anymore. Some parts of the world do, but not many, thank goodness. But what we do have are man-eating issues, relationship issues, an argument with our nearest and dearest, health issues, our own health, health issues of our loved ones that really stress us out, bills that we can't pay, landlords that are trying to evict us, bosses that get on our case. All the things that stress us out are triggering the limbic system. And when you're stressed, when you're worried about things, you shut down. And that's when procrastination kicks in, because procrastination is, how do I make myself feel more comfortable right now? You go to something familiar, not something that makes you even more uncomfortable. So it'll be whatever is familiar to you. It'll be, you know, food. I mean, since I've done this, I suddenly realized the other day, crikey, you know, I've lost 60 pounds since in the last year. And oh yeah, it was a conscious effort, but before I never succeeded in losing that much weight because I was too stressed all the time.
Emotional eating.
And I've as a byproduct of this, I've lost 60 pounds. I'm not selling it as a diet program, not at all. But I'm pretty pleased that I got that from it.
Yeah.
So that's your limbic system. Now, at the front of your brain, at the top of your brain, and your forehead, is the prefrontal cortex, which evolutionary speaking is a much younger part of your brain. And it's where the reward modality is triggered. And we're really interested in the reward modality. If you're a student and you're under 25, you're in trouble because it hasn't fully formed yet. That's why the students are the biggest procrastinator body in the world, because you've got your newfound freedom moving away from home, and you don't want to work, you want to play and drink and do all the things that students do because you're young and healthy, and your prefrontal cortex isn't fully formed anyway, which means that your rational thinking isn't fully in place,
right?
So the way I try to explain this is, in now I've that's the bit of the science, I'm going to give you three more scientific words, and then I'm going to explain it in plain English. In terms of getting more productive, you need three neurotransmitters working efficiently in your brain to get you into peak performance. They are dopamine, you've heard of that one, that's a famous one. There's acetylcholine, and there's noradrenaline. And it took me like 6 months to memorize those three words because I'm terrible with stuff like that. So I decided to write them into a language that I understood. What do they do? And I created just three easy to remember ways of remembering them. The dopamine is the conductor, like the conductor of an orchestra. And the conductor sits up there in the prefrontal cortex, and he takes the cacophony of the different noises that all the instruments make and it gives them sheet music that blends them all together harmoniously. And then you end up with the conductor conducting, making the music of your life, right? So they're in charge. Then you need the scholar. Now, the scholar provides acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is the neurotransmitter that creates focus. And you know when it's present, because when you sit down to do work for like 5 minutes and you get deeply into what you're doing and you look up at the clock after 5 minutes and you realize an hour's gone by, that's because you were focused, and that's because acetylcholine was present. But here's the kicker. In children, acetylcholine is produced naturally and is just present. That's why children are brilliant at focusing. That's why they're scholars.
But
they learn, children learn to speak a language, to understand a language, to learn to walk, to run, to do the most phenomenal things in the shortest, it still takes a long time, it still takes 10 years or so, but in a very short space of time compared to the struggle we have as adults when acetylcholine is no longer present. And so we have to generate it by forcing ourselves to focus. But in children, yeah, children are easily distracted, for sure. Children, like a child with gas, hello, you know, oh, I'm watching, I've got gas. But if you think about it, children are actually brilliant at focusing. They'll sit and stare and watch their parents for hours and hours and hours whilst they absorb the language. And then,
well, you're talking about infants. I'm talking about school age children.
I'm talking about young children.
Okay.
Young children,
got it. Right? Okay. Right? Yeah.
But
okay.
You have to learn, because it's survival.
Yes, it's fantastic still, to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. They're still vulnerable, but so they have to learn to survive as quickly as they can. It's years.
But yes, no, I get it. Takes, it. Okay.
If you've ever tried to learn a language as an adult, you know it's much harder.
Difficult.
Than the time you did when you were a child. So that's the acetylcholine. That's the scholar. And that's focus. You need to be focused. Mm-hmm. And the final one is noradrenaline. And noradrenaline, I describe that as the fun-sized warrior, like fun-sized chocolate bars that you have in your children's pack lunches. And the fun, not the big warrior. The big warrior is what you need to fight a tiger or a war if you're a soldier. And you need them, but that produces another neurotransmitter called cortisol. And you don't want that if you're trying to work. You want it if you're trying to kill a tiger or run from a tiger, but you don't want it at work because it's too much. It shuts down the conductor. It locks them out of the building. You don't think rationally. You think instinctively, which has its place in the survival mechanism, but it doesn't have its place in the office very often. It's very unlikely that you're going to need it in your day-to-day life. The fun size warrior, though, is just like I'm talking to you now. I'm literally sat on the edge of my chair because I'm focused, and I'm also keeping up my energy as I talk to you and trying not to lose my train of thought because I'm really good at doing that normally. Right? So there we go. I've just lost it then. So the point is that the fun size warrior just gives you that little bit of edge, that little bit of anxiety, that little bit of stress. Which James Clear beautifully summarizes it in his Goldilocks principle. Not too much, not too little, just enough.
Mm.
All right. So you need that, those three, the conductor, the scholar, and the fun size warrior. And that's what when I work with my clients, and it's in the book, that's what I teach them, that you need those three avatars in the building, your productivity trifecta, to get you into the groove of productivity. I use the Madonna, into the groove, a great, lovely little music worm that goes around in my head. I'm into the groove, like the groove on a vinyl record. You want to get the stylus in it. You don't want it to jump out. It has to go in to go around to get the whole thing done.
Wow. Okay. So a couple of things come to mind. One is projects. So when August was a little bit of a slow month client-wise, a great time to start a project and a longer-term project and so forth. And I have two that I started. Neither have I finished, right? And they're kind of halfway there, but they're not done, and they need to be done before the end of September. But now, of course, it's gotten busier and the everyday stuff gets in the way. And I feel like I'm procrastinating because I always tell this story about somebody told me once about we must empty the fountain. Do you know that little story where the couple are talking to each other constantly? God, we've got to get that fountain outside in the, you know, driveway. We've got to get that fountain drained before winter comes. We have to get it drained before winter comes. And they keep telling each other, but nobody does anything. And when they finally get to it, they realize it took 20 minutes. It took them longer to procrastinate and go through this trauma.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so where does the, in your system, I feel like I should, you know, snap a finger and get back into it. But how do I get myself back into that?
Okay. So that's a very, that cuts to
yeah.
the chase, doesn't it? So you need, so the kind of things that, that I do when I'm working with clients is we talk about building structure into your life, structure and routine, because although it sounds obvious, if you have a structure and a routine, it means that things are pre-decided. Pre-decided is easy. It's the stuff that's not pre-decided. It's the stuff that feels a little bit overwhelming. It's the worry, like you say, it's the thinking about it rather than just the doing it.
Right.
So you need structure. The other thing is you need feedback. So that's where accountability comes in. We provide mm-hmm. feedback, and we and it isn't about accountability, by the way. It's not about applying pressure. It's about giving you permission to follow through.
Can I just interject here for a second?
Sure.
Because I can hear myself when I'm talking to prospects doing it with or for them. But when it comes to me, I get caught, right? So
yes.
I talked to a gentleman this morning who wants to do some LinkedIn training, and great. And he's a perfect client for me, and I'm really excited about it. And he said to me, the problem, Janice, is the time. And I said, no, I think the problem is prioritizing the time. Right? Because I get that. We all have that issue with time and choosing, but it's choosing. It's choosing whether we actually want to do it or not.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's something I'd cover again in the book.
Yes,
I'm sorry,
good.
But you reminded me.
Yeah.
Like, for example, procrastination is not laziness.
No.
So someone who is lazy, I point out in the book that one person's laziness is another person's rest and relaxation. So we can't judge. But also someone who's lazy, by definition, a procrastinator is like, why am I irrationally not doing this? And they get really upset with themselves. And they wake up at 3:08 in the morning. Why can't I do this? Why can't I do this? What's wrong with me? That kind of thing. It's always 3:08, by the way. Don't know why, but it always is. But someone who's lazy, they don't care. They're not interested in doing it in the first place. So I'm not addressing that because that's a personal thing. But procrastination is irrational. Laziness is rational. So the way that we chunk it down, basically. So for example, it's not always about motivation. It's about a problem with your systems.
Mm.
So for example,
or not having any.
You're not having it. So you have to work out, well, what actually does work for you?
Yeah.
You need to think about micro deadlines and chunking things down to make things more manageable. I always think in terms of chocolate chunk bite-sized pieces.
I love your analogies. They're great.
That's right. Because it makes me think, oh yeah, bite-sized chocolate.
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
I can understand that because you've got to get rid of the overwhelm.
Yes.
Right. So if you think, right, okay, this project is, see, when you talk about a project, immediately my mind goes to, that can be anything from, I mean, when I started writing my book, mm-hmm. right, I thought about, I can get this done in 3 months. You know, that was 5 years ago. Because I was overconfident, which is something else that you have to watch out for. There's lack of confidence, which is a procrastinator's
yes.
mantra, but there's also overconfidence where you miscalculate. But a project, think of it in terms of like the classic student example of, they've given me 3 months to do an essay. So what do? They spend the first day planning out how they're going to spend the next 3 months. Day one, I'm going to do this. Day two, I'm going to do this. Week one, I'll have achieved this. Weekend off. Week two, I'll have achieved this. Weekend off. Week three, right. When do they actually start the work?
The day before.
Yeah, the day before. Right? And the reason that happens again and again and again and again and again is because it felt too far off, too ethereal, too not real. So one of the things that you need to do, whether you have an accountability coach or not, because the book is about self-help. I'm not saying everybody needs an accountability mm-hmm. coach. You can do this for yourself, is you need to set yourself more realistic, more immediate goals, little hurdles that you want to achieve, get a jump, not worry about the end destination yet. So with a project which can be 12 weeks, 12 months, 12 years, you need to think, well, okay, yeah, but what do I need to do by the end of today? What do I need to do mm-hmm. by the end of the week? Like a writer writing a book will say, well, I don't go out for the day until I've written 1,000 words,
mm-hmm.
right? And they do that every day. But writers are classic procrastinators. You know, Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Miserables, had himself locked in his room naked for 3 months with telling his servants, feed me, but don't give me my clothes until I finished my book. After wasting a year, he lost a year to procrastination, and his publisher was understandably rather tinkled with him, mm-hmm. to say the least. Probably mm-hmm. could kill him in that era. So, but most writers understand to be a bit more disciplined. So you need structure. And the most important thing to remember about procrastination is it's emotional. It's all about the emotions.
Really?
Yeah. So if you are getting stressed, that's emotional. And of course you're going to procrastinate, because procrastination reduces the stress. Like I was talking about emotional eating. Ice cream is for me, fantastic stress beater. Chocolate's a stress beater. Maybe afterwards I'd feel stressed because I shouldn't have eaten it. Yeah. But at the time, that's the last thing on my mind, right? But equally, so is doing things that are familiar. Doom scrolling on the phone, chatting to friends on social media, reading social media, watching TV, playing games, going for walks, all the things that we do to distract ourselves are familiar. And as I point out in the book, they meet our human needs in the moment.
Okay, so I just want to sideline for a second to something you said earlier, and something that I'm just trying to understand myself, I think, a little bit more based on what you've said. So, you said we all have dinner and we'll leave the dishes. That drives me insane. Okay. I have to get the kitchen cleaned up as soon as possible. Now, when we had kids at home, kids would help and it became a routine and you did all that. Now we're sort of, you know, we may even eat dinner in front of the TV, where we would never do that when the kids were here. Right. And if I cook, my husband cleans up, but he's not in as much of a hurry to clean up as I am. So if the dishes sit there, it's eating at me until he gets up to do it. Now, is that something that's procrastinating, a procrastination type of thing, like the opposite, or is it just neuroses? You know, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like there's certain things that I can't procrastinate on, but there's other things that, yes, I can.
Okay. So I use the dishes as an analogy.
I know.
But you actually described chronic procrastination.
Oh, really?
It's not about the dishes. It's about work. In other words, if the dishes don't get washed, it drives you crazy.
Yeah.
But if the work doesn't get done, that means less cash in the bank at the end of the month, less mm-hmm. time freedom, mm-hmm. possibly impact on your health over time, which is how it affected me. So it's the damaging chronic procrastination that we're after. The thing about the dishes and your husband and the kids, that's between you and them. I'm not a family therapist, but I'm not trying to be flippant about that. I'm simply saying that. But also I use the analogy of the dishes in another way. In the book, I talk about the fact I'm a trained life coach. Okay. So, and I've already mentioned about, you know, having goals and stuff, but actually instinctively, I've never liked goals. I haven't liked goals either.
Yeah. Right?
And there are very, very, very successful people that have never written down a goal in their entire life, mm-hmm. but yet they're very successful. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think actually that goals have a role, but I think they need to be put in their place. And when I looked at the research, what I found out astonished me. And I found out that the researchers realized that the act of setting a goal sets up a feeling of obligation. It does. That's not rocket science. But what is an obligation if nothing more than stress? And when we stress, we procrastinate. And so it feels irrational, because why am I procrastinating over this goal that I really want to achieve? So instead, in my book, I talk about, I use goals as a means to an end. I call them milestone goals. But what's the end? Well, the end is about personal life vision. That's a term, not a unique term to me. It's a jargon, but it just means, let's say, again, the analogy I use in the book, let's say that you want to be an oncologist, and that's like 15 years into the future. You haven't even started studying to be a doctor yet. And that takes, in this country, in the UK, that takes 7 years. I'm sure in America it's about the same time. Then you specialize, and maybe 15 years time you can be an oncologist. Here's the thing about dishes. If you are sat at home looking at the dirty dishes on the kitchen table and you're procrastinating over them, it might drive you crazy if it's the kids that have done it. I've got adult kids and it still drives me crazy. I completely identify with you, but I don't see it as life-changing or life-impacting. I just see it as annoying. So I don't talk about that in my book. But what if the kitchen island is the area where you study for your degree to be a doctor? And you can't study because the dishes are cluttering up.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it might not occur to you that clearing the dishes today will help you. It might be true that it means that you can get a better grade on that essay that you've got to write at the end of the month that goes towards your doctor's degree. It might not occur to you, but if you have a clear vision in your mind when you wake up in the morning and you carry it through with you all day and you live it, you breathe it, you feel it, you sense, I am an oncologist. Okay, I may not be yet, but I'm going to be.
Yeah.
Then you'll look at those dishes and you won't see a pile of dirty dishes. You'll see an obstruction to you achieving your ultimate dream.
Yeah.
Oh, then they're out of here. Now, that's not what's going on with you, I suspect, Janice.
No.
You're just a bit obsessed with the dishes. So am I. I understand.
OCD.
But the real procrastination is when you realize whatever it is that you're not doing right now that you could be doing will impact you achieving your ultimate life vision. Your personal
life
vision.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's really, really, yeah, that sums it up in a nutshell, really. And I get it. I see the difference. So, I'd like to wrap up by just asking you to maybe give your best piece of advice to us business owners who don't have a system or need to stop this procrastination to move forward. One would be to buy your book, but what is your piece of advice that you would leave with us?
Okay, as you mentioned, buying my book, I should start by saying, people, I'd love it if you buy my book. It's available on Amazon as a Kindle and a printed book, but you can have it for free.
Mm.
And as a PDF, and if you go to my dedicated URL, reallyusefultips.com, that's really as in, yes, I really do mean it. I haven't come to my senses. I am giving it away. Useful as in, I hope you find it useful, and it's full of tips.com, reallyusefultips.com, and you can have it as a free unabridged PDF. So my top tip is get the book because there's lots of tips in there. But I would say that my top tip for people in the same position as me is, well, I suppose there's two really. The first is, are you like me? As in, you didn't really own it, that you were a procrastinator? If you're not, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But if you find yourself making excuses, doesn't matter what you call it, for not working, you may be procrastinating. And also, I'm not in the business of helping people become more productive. That's a means to an end. The end is, I'm in the business of helping people make more cash, which leads to more time freedom, which means to better health, which means a more work-life balance. If you want more of that, then okay, you need to get more productive. And I would say my best suggestion is be kind to yourself. Understand that that is what may have been going on for you. There isn't a cure, but there is a strategy for dealing with it. And not just me, there's lots of strategies, but get strategic about it. Get acting on it. And if tomorrow you're not sure how to overcome procrastination, just sit down and do 10 minutes of work. That's it. Just say, I'll do 10 minutes. And if at the end of 10 minutes, you can hack doing another 10 minutes before you put the kettle on or have a coffee, great, do another 10 minutes. That's how I do it. Even now, I use Pomodoros. That was a technique invented by an Italian guy in the student in the 80s. I break my day up. I have 12 poms today, 12 Pomodoros, 6 hours work, solid, with 5 minutes breaks. Fantastic.
Yeah, I remember that being one of the techniques that was talked about when I was working in that field.
But again, it won't work for everyone. Just find what works for you.
Okay, fantastic. So you've given us food for thought. It's not about working harder. It's about really becoming a different person. It's about building systems and that support who we already are. By using momentum, accountability, and the power of relationships, we can shift from scattered effort to steady progress. And I think your get results-ology framework proves that consistent action leads to meaningful results and that no one has to do it alone. Fascinating. And I could talk about this forever because I lived it when I was being a professional organizer for people. I remember they hired me to do things on a monthly basis that they were procrastinating about every month. They never changed their pattern. And I got tired of being the babysitter because they never changed the pattern. So it was another whole subject, but interesting, made me think of that. So thank you. Thank you for being here, Robin. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us from across the pond. I love it and appreciate you. And I'm going to encourage my listeners to get hold of Robin's book one way or the other. And I will put the links in the show notes. And thanks for being here. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people. So I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.